Okay, welcome back to another episode, and we have Lyra here.
Hello.
Back again. So Lyra, you missed the last two episodes with our guests, right?
Yes.
And so in that time, you know, I sort of have been thinking, you know, what kind of topic we want to continue to have. Of course, earlier in the season, we kind of talk about the American politics. And just a couple of days ago, I saw this headline, and this is by NBC News, 12th of March. And it reads, Trump clinches delegate majority for GOP nomination. NBC News projects setting up Biden rematch. So early in the primary game, the two old rivals are coming back, which is a bit unusual for both sides.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, we don't really have another president that have basically had another presidential campaign again. I mean, except for one that was happening so long ago.
Yeah, I mean, for one to lose the election and come back so strongly in the next primary is basically unheard of. Then, of course, on the Democrat side, very interesting that nobody really came out to challenge Biden. I mean, we have some kind of rumor, or maybe Newsom, maybe Michelle Obama, but they all kind of declined. Now, let me ask you, why do you think they declined?
I think, one, you do need a lot of time to prepare for a very, very successful presidential campaign. And I think to do that, I think it would be... They probably learned a lesson from Ron DeSantis coming out at the wrong timing.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get like huge consequences on the political career. And these are two young candidates that probably have very, very bright future ahead of them. I mean, obviously, Michelle Obama, I don't think she really wanted to be in politics. Mm. But you talk about a bright candidate like in Democrat, like Newsom. I don't think he want to jeopardize his political career at this juncture. I mean, it would be like a suicide for him.
I mean, when you come out to present yourself as a presidential candidate, if you fail to hit the mark, I think it will be costly in terms of whether you can come back again. So, and the whole thing with Biden is really, I mean, how do I put it? His lack of performance is becoming so obvious. And, you know, when I was talking to people who are like reading mainstream media, and that's another reason we're doing this episode and why we're focusing on the American politics again, because I really want to explore, you know, how Malaysian look at the whole thing. And that's going to be interesting, because every time I hear people have a point of view, and these are the people who read mainstream media. So I just talked to one person the other day, and he was like, so Biden and Trump, who's going to win? Then before I even say anything, they say, oh, this Biden, you know, cannot pakai. It's like just, I mean, the mainstream media has not been able to cover for his incompetency. And so the people on the street are saying that it's an election for Trump to lose. This is from mainstream media reading people in Malaysia. So I find it very interesting, and we kind of want to discuss how Malaysian process all these things. And maybe we have to talk a little bit about the media consumption, because so far we have been kind of cautious not to recommend particular media and things like that. But I think we really need to help people to start, and then you determine whether it is a fair go or not. Because, you know, after I discussed this with you, I went to read some mainstream media. I just cannot... Because when you know the lies they are peddling, you just cannot stomach and process it.
I think the main question would be, a lot of people, because with so much overloading of the media that you see, mm-hmm. especially when these days we have a lot of different generations that are just having the media consumption anywhere and everywhere, and especially like TikTok, you just have like that, the 1 minute rule. If you don't capture their mind within the first few seconds, then that's it. So with that sort of generation that is rising up, how are you going to have discernment over whichever media? Because people could be saying, hey, how do you know that your source is the truth? Because both sides are presenting their sides of the story, and it would seem like the majority is reporting the truth. Because especially when you have a lot of mainstream media that are reporting in news repeatedly, and people will be just thinking that, I think generally people won't be thinking that they are just an echo chamber for a certain agenda.
Yeah, and we if we go back to 2016, the moment President Trump won over Hillary Clinton, there was this reporting of how at the Google headquarters, it was like a mourning, kind of very depressive scene. And after that, I think Zuckerberg also came out and say, we're going to ensure that this will not happen again. So there was really, when you look at the net cycle 2020, and there are literature on that, there are reporting on that, the social media influence on, I mean, there are certain voters, they are already deadlocked in terms of, I mean, even in Malaysia, right, we talk about, you know, if you support the Pakatan Harapan, of course, now we have unity government, or those say you have whatever combination of the Malay supremacy. So you have people who are already locked into their choices.
Yep.
But you always have that 20, 30, I don't know what is the percentage of undecided voters. They are what you call the swing votes. So those are the ones that you really need to capture their heart and imagination. And that's where the social media comes in very strongly. And even things like when you type in what is the first suggestion that comes from a search engine, all those kind of impact your decision making. So, you know, so the conservative in US, they've been saying that when Elon Musk took over ads, that allowed a lot of conservative personality to return and to kind of control the narrative in what you just described, echo chamber. And many people felt that was a game changer for 2023, of course, going forward.
Yep.
Then, of course, this time we're just talking about the, you know, the Congress just passed the law.
TikTok ban.
To ban. But that's not really a TikTok ban, right?
I mean, in short, it is.
Yeah, but what they are saying is that, look, we don't want TikTok to be controlled by CCP.
Yeah, I think essentially it's really the data flow that they are trying to restrict, because you have no way. I mean, going back to CCP, we know that anything, everything has to pass through the surveillance of CCP. So, I mean, we're not like going against it. It's just that, is that the sort of society that you want to live in? Because knowing that your data is just being freely sold to the state, and who knows what they're going to do with this.
Now, of course, we are not even discussing whether we agree or disagree, but one of the things we kind of talk about was Eric Snowden, right? So a lot
Edward
of the critique...
Snowden?
Edward Snowden. So there was a time NSA created backdoor on all the devices. Even Apple was involved. Android, Samsung, everyone was involved. And when WikiLeaks kind of came out, and it was revealed that United States even spy on people like Angela Merkel and things like that. So people would just compare to that incident and say, look, you are just being a hypocrite. I guess they do have a point, right? So it's almost like, how come only the American can become Big Brother? So I guess that's one. Now, I mentioned this incident because that is really how we have to consider, you know, in terms of the Malaysian viewers and listeners, they are understanding. They have this kind of foundational thinking, I guess, that the West are just bullying people. And I guess in Malaysia, we are very much influenced by what is coming out from the China media. I mean, I'm talking about the media that support the China state, for example. So do you feel like there is that kind of dynamic happening in terms of when Malaysian try to process the American political development?
Yeah, for sure. I think one of the biggest incidents that came into my mind is obviously the war in the Middle East. Because that's when you begin to see a lot of narrative that people are just saying that, hey, we don't believe Western media at all because they are not portraying the truth of what is actually happening in the Middle East. But the thing is, the challenge would be, hey, but what are you reading also? I mean, is it really portraying the truth? So I think that's really that blurred line that people don't see. And I think generally people are more, when you come into that sort of mindset of, hey, we need to decolonize from the previous emperor that has been colonizing the whole Malaysia. I mean, people are just so adamant to just, hey, we want to just break free completely. But what are they really reading? Because I think it's so, to me, it felt like it's word of mouth. especially when you see like certain franchises that were being banned and things like that, and actually a huge group of people were suffering because of the loss in the businesses and things like that. But even then, you begin to think, but all this thing, does it really matter? I mean, when we had the era where during COVID, during the lockdown, we have the Kita Jaga Kita slogan.
Mm.
But you don't really see that, especially in this, during the outbreak of the Middle East war, whereby people are just saying that, nope, I mean, some of these entities, you clearly know that these are Malaysian-owned entities, businesses, and yet they are just so abdomen because certain TSA news or certain things, you just felt like, nope, they are not supporting the cause of what you believe it's what they were being convicted of. So I felt like there is that. It's more like it's word of mouth rather than just really filtering through what the media is really saying.
Is it because people are being emotional about that, or is there a deeper level of, you know, cultural, educational programming?
Probably. I mean, probably it's a mixture of both. Mm. And also, I think Malaysian politicians, unfortunately, they are great.
They take advantage of the whole scenario.
They look at your face, they look at your... If you're emotionally triggered by certain agenda, they will just keep going after that narrative, and people, hopefully, you get people emotionally stirred up. I mean, we also had the episode where we talked with our friend David Deng on the part where Malaysian voters are quite emotional, in the sense that if you get them heightened on certain senses during certain campaign, the issues that were being highlighted just sort of touched their heart. They're like, look, I'm going to give you the vote, or I'm not going to give you the vote.
And I think the whole issue with the Palestine and the boycott really demonstrate that culture and religions work.
Yeah.
In terms of impacting the voters for the better or for the worse.
And I think that somehow framed the way that they are reading the news media. Mm. And if certain things felt like it doesn't go along with the conviction, they were just, it's like there's just a layer of blockage that they are not open to listen to any other sort of opinion. So I think the goal here is not so much on trying to convince this group of people. It's more like, hey, have you considered all different sources, and have you considered like different kind of media? And especially when you're so adamant that Western media must be wrong. Why is that so? Is it because you heard it from the elders, or is it because you heard it from your parents, heard it from the ketua, like ketua ketua kampung, and all those sort of things? Is it really because of that? Why must everything that they say must be true, the truth? So how are you actually processing the true art of journalism, I think, in this decade would be very, very crucial.
Yeah, that's really one of the key themes for the whole show, right? Make out your own determination, but you need to have certain framework that allows you to at least analyze the news that doesn't cause you to be blindsided. Because I guess that's a general observation, right? If people don't put in sufficient effort to... And it does take more effort because a lot of opinion pieces are camouflaged as news. You know, it's not reporting, it is pure opinion. And of course, you know, hearing you talk about the Palestine issue, the other issue that really polarized the whole discussion will be the Ukraine war.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people will be surprised that there is actually a growing number of people in America, especially, that is against Ukraine war. But you won't get that if you have been reading just the mainstream media. But even the mainstream media are changing the tune, right? The other day, Pope, you know, by the way, Pope is a representation of the establishment. So he said, look, Ukraine will have to consider terms of surrender with Russia. So it's like the globalists are basically maybe in anticipation of possible victory by Donald Trump. And I guess maybe this is a good time for us to pivot back to Trump and Biden, because one of the reasons we continue to talk about American politics is just we believe what happens there has great impact. And I was just talking to one colleague who came from Australia, and very interesting, he's kind of oldish already, just recently become equity in our group. And he said, look, I am putting my faith in ringgit.
Wow.
So I said, what do you mean by that? So he said, well, I think we are going as low as we could already. And he felt like we can go up from here. So very interesting because then of course it makes me think, right? The whole thing with ringgit is because of our proximity with US dollar, our trade, our relationship with China and things like that. And I find a lot of people, maybe they understand China much better than America in terms of what's happening there.
Yeah.
So that kind of is my motivation for wanting to continue. So I was just telling you right, that maybe, I don't know if it's a feasible plan. You know, we want to continue to kind of look at American political perspective for the rest of the season until the election. Of course, we want to highlight Malaysian points from time to time. Of course, if there's something really, really important that is happening in Malaysia, we need to discuss, obviously.
Yeah, I think generally, even with Malaysian politicians, whenever they hear the word Trump, they will be triggered. I mean, we are just here to present a very, very alternative view concerning Trump. I mean, why would American, if let's say he's so demonized, why would Americans still continuously show support for him? And his support has never been greater. I mean, now that he is the Republican candidate.
So I was just reading from New Straits Time today. And now, obviously, all the local news, if whenever they try to analyze the American news, they'll be taking from other sources. You hardly see any opinion pieces. I mean, if they mention, they'll just say, oh, this guy is deranged or things like that. I mean, it's a very superficial kind of discussion. But they refer to this article. The writers are from Agency France Presse. I guess it must be. I don't even know who they are. Probably from France. And the title is called The Most Bitter US Presidential Contest. Now, I'm not going to read the whole thing. But kind of just, in a way, kind of good reporting, like, because both of them have open shots and things like that. Now, obviously, they are more, they are the establishment, they are more in favor of Biden and things like that. They still try to portray Trump as a crazy person and things like that. But people kind of forgotten that during his 4 years, there's no war, there's no Israel-Hamas kind of thing. Economy was great, there was no inflation, even though the whole time it coincided with COVID, but the economy overall was still good.
Yep.
So that's very interesting. But I just find that there are more of this kind of article now, maybe because people are kind of, well, maybe he'll be back. As in, maybe Trump will be back and we have to plan accordingly. So, what's your impression? I mean, what's your impression of Malaysian, you know, their view of Biden and Trump?
Well, I guess more and more people are awakened to what actually is happening. Although they still hold the view that, hey, America is evil. I'm not being sarcastic here, but generally, the first comment that I hear from the people, especially when you talk about certain interesting Supreme Court opinions that have been released in the States, and I mean, certain topics like affirmative action, diversity, equity, inclusivity, those sort of things.
So these are like, you know, I mean, are they Malay or, you know?
Yeah, I guess you have a mixture of crowd, and yet it's like...
But it's quite uniform, the reaction you get.
Yeah, I think they are very... It's like they know certain things like affirmative action doesn't really work, and yet they are very sold into like diversity. Hey, we need to be a bit more inclusive here. But then... So I was kind of challenging them as well. I say, if let's say today you need to go to have a surgery, I mean, you're not going to care... I mean, all you care about is the portfolio, the successful,
the best rate, possible treatment, yeah, right?
Based on your ability and things like that. And you want to get the best care, medical care. And you're not going to care about the skin color or what language they speak, so long they give you the best treatment.
Yep.
And it doesn't really click because it just felt like... It's like they just feel like, we still have to be a bit more inclusive. But I think the whole idea is so hijacked or so perverse that they can't really tell the difference. But I do believe that slowly Malaysians are breaking away from that narrative because there's only so much lie that you can hear and just being echoed through and through. And eventually you're going to find, hey, how come? I mean, to say that Trump is not doing a good job during his 4 years term, I think that sort of narrative is starting to break because you can't... It's like when you are being presented a great case versus a very, very bad sort of economic scenario, how do you... You can't
a
really...
A nut case, right, that's happening right now. And look at the inflation and things like that. Look at the loss of control over, you know, the Ukraine war and things like that. Look at the borders. You know, it's an invasion, and even the mainstream media cannot deny that anymore. And you start to see sanctuary cities, sanctuary state, you know, those so-called area they say we welcome migrants. And their whole argument, of course, and this is another thing I think people need to understand, that when we talk about borders and not everyone can come and take and become Malaysian citizens just like that, I think everyone in Malaysia can understand and can agree. Do you want anyone can just cross the border and become Malaysian just like that?
No.
But why is it that when it comes to other countries, people have this kind of double standard and say that they have to... Now, of course, one of the things that people like Joe Biden and other people are saying, look, America has always been a migrant nation. Yes, legal migrant. Now we're talking about illegal migrant. And if you want to become a citizen, you have to prove that you can assimilate with the society. You know, that's why you want to migrate to Australia, for example. You need to show that you have the skill set that the nation require and desire. You have the command of English. You need to have some civic citizenship education. I mean, you can't migrate to a country and know nuts. And even in Malaysia, I think you have a requirement for Bahasa Malaysia minimum, at least able to converse and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you do want legal migrants because they are contributors to the economy. You don't want to have like illegal migrants and that you begin to have like a lot of societal issues, like what you're seeing in the UK. I mean, you see so many riots happening in London itself, and what used to be a great city is now swarmed with all this illegal... I mean, it's not so much of illegal migrants over there, it's because they practice an open border sort of policy and just anyone, everyone, we welcome you to the country. And look, I think it does have a detrimental effect on the English culture.
Yeah, and overall, you know, Europe has been having these open borders for a long time. So you see the establishment politician there, we kind of sidetrack a bit to Europe, they kind of resigned to the fact that open borders is a thing to stay. But of course, if you are the elite, if you have a mansion, you are able to erect high walls, you are able to have security with machine guns, private security, then of course you can afford to have all these people come into your nation. You are still protected, well protected. But ordinary persons, their houses are being looted, their territory are being destroyed, these people are suffering. And for that reason, you are seeing that anti-immigration, anti-open borders parties are gaining all over Europe. So that's really the overall battle that is happening, the battle for nations. You look at China's ambition, you look at Ukraine, Russia, you look at Palestine, Hamas, open borders, all these things, it looks like all the nations are being arranged in this decade, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you using the example, like the communist countries, China, Russia, they are so protective of their borders. Why? I mean, you sort of have to give credit to them in that sense because they are so protective of their whole nation, the economy and things like that. It's like literally closed border. You can, I mean, obviously the downside would be they want your businesses, but you can't have their businesses. So, I mean, you don't want to go to that extreme as well, but you also have certain cases where I do think the national interest should be put well above the global interest.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's another thing that people need to begin to understand where Donald Trump is coming from, because people are so used to being freeloader over America, the nation. And it's ironic because people criticize them all the time, and yet they felt entitled to take everything from them. So look at one of the first things that Trump did when he became president was he pulled out from Paris Accord. Paris Accord basically forced all the industrial nations to commit billions and trillions over the next 20, 30 years. And Trump will be like, well, why should we? Then, of course, some of the things that he said, like he wanted to end, he said he wouldn't have supported Ukraine war because why should America be responsible for Europe defense? And he will be like, members of NATO, you need to pay money. You cannot rely on American troops.
Now, the other day you highlighted about the fact, was it Japan or Korea?
South Korea, yeah. So South Korea, you know, Americans have troops there. And so during Trump's time, he wanted South Korea to pay 10 times the amount. I think it's like 4 to 5 billion per year. And Trump was like, I'm helping your economy because you have to buy food and things like that for the troops, but we are buying from your vendor. I'm helping your economy. So now the news was that South Korea government is trying to negotiate a new deal like right now before the potential return of Trump. And this is the thing about the whole American First movement, which I feel people need to understand. And then and you see that, look, if nations want to have kind of beneficial trading relationship, it has to be give and take. You cannot give all the time and you cannot take all the time and not give. And that's one of the point I think we kind of mentioned before, and that's Trump's approach to China. And I feel a lot of Malaysians don't understand that. Is China was and still is the greatest exporter to US. Many, many respect and things like that. So because ever since they enter World Trade Organization, they have access to the world market. So that's all good and fine. But then what Trump was saying is that, look, you can sell me many things. I should be able to sell things to you.
Yep.
And that was what China has been resisting. You know how hard it is to do business in China? I think you go to China and do something, it's almost impossible. Even Malaysian businesses, they say, oh, we thrive on Chinese economy. Basically, you are selling things. You do things here and you sell over there. Yes, that's fine. But you want to go there, develop a market, is impossible. And people don't really understand the close nature of the China economy. So this was what Trump saw, and he just felt like, well, if that's the case, I cannot sell to you, fine. You can still sell to me, but I'm going to impose tariff. So, I mean, this is a very simplistic view. And one of the reasons why this election cycle, I think people are going to see more and more contrast between the two systems. It's really... of course, what happens if there's a strong economy there, it will help us also. Now let's talk a little bit about why the economy is so bad. I know we're both not economists and things like that. I start first, then you can add on. It felt like the COVID, the consequences of lockdown, things like that, have not fully been resolved. Because these are the people who make all these decisions, and now they have been found to be wrong. But they continue to double down and say, look, we didn't do a wrong thing. And I think we're still paying. I mean, even in Malaysia, right, they did so much spending year 2021, 2022, and now our budget is kind of in deficit.
Yeah, I think the whole nation is still really, really suffering. I mean, obviously, yes, you have certain great campaign promises, election promises that were made. And I mean, it's not just so simple to just reverse the damages that we have actually felt during the lockdown season.
Yeah.
Because the moment the economy is closed, I mean, I'm just using construction as an analogy. There's not something that you call as the learning curve. So once you have hit that and like reached that state, and you are able to just like replicate the whole thing altogether. So the construction cycle becomes very, like, if let's say you were trying to reach and build a whole level using aluminium system formwork, and you think maybe initially it will take like a week, but once you have hit the optimum, then the speed will just become like four days, you can just go up. So that's how we continue to use like a modular system. So I think in the same way when it comes to economy as well, so once you have reached that momentum and to build on it, it's easier that people are just able to just keep on riding the wave. But once it comes down, it's really just a lot of downtime. You have to kickstart all over again, and people don't realize that the amount of resources that you need to remobilize again, it takes more time, more effort, more energy, and more training that is really, really needed. So in the same way, when economy, people are like, yeah, initially, I mean, obviously, as when you're starting to hear about lockdown, yeah, 2 weeks of break.
Become
break.
1 year.
Become 1 year. And then people are like, I'm in a state of limbo for so long that to now get people to go back to office, it's not an easy feat. So when it's applied in an economic sense, I think people are feeling... You have to get people out of that sluggish mode and really going back into that thriving mode again. It's not easy.
Yeah, one of the things that I think we can kind of close with this, and with so much suffering, I mean, would you agree there's a lot of suffering and hardship, not just in Malaysia, around the world because of COVID, because of policies or government. Do you think people are starting to see that there is a level of bullshit coming from the establishment, and because of that, people are... So I mean, usually when people felt like that, I see two responses. One would be they just continue to accept and just, I can't do anything about it. But then you start to have another category of people who kind of like, look, I'm not satisfied with this, and I'm going to into another place to begin to find out more information. And so just to link with this, the other day, my father was just telling me, oh, do you know that Malaysian government now published the daily accident death rate for the whole country?
Really?
Yeah. They started to do that. And I think very quickly, the number of deaths from accident way exceed all the deaths of COVID in Malaysia.
Wow.
Very quickly. So it just shows that, look, the COVID death has been greatly exaggerated and has been used to... I mean, we did many, many episodes on that for one season. But it's like people can start to see that. So do you think that people are starting to see that, and that's why even things like, you know, like Biden and Trump, people are kind of having a fresh perspective, maybe?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you just talk about, I mean, previously, MySejahtera app. And also Padu.
Who still use them?
No one uses it anymore. But you have the next launch of Padu, for instance. The registration rate is not great at all.
Yeah, is it because they felt conned by MySejahtera and now it's like... Actually, so many people... And we're just talking to David Tian, right? And because he was in a civil service. And he said, well... It's like they have not been forced to sign, but strongly encouraged, obviously. But it seems like the take-out rate is very, very low.
I think, to me, I take it as a positive sign that people are waking out and it's like, why do I need to freely give you the...
Do you know anyone who signed up for Padu?
No, I've not. I mean, except those who are really in the line of civil service. I think those that inevitably you can't really...
But one of our friends say that they can register and they submit a blank data and it will be like, thank you very much for registering. So it's like a KPI kind of thing for our dear Rafizi. And I think people are not very convinced. And you know, we always say people forget too quickly. And I in a way, that's why suffering is good. Because suffering causes you to remember why you suffer in the first place.
I think it's just not just the suffering, it's a continual educating, because even with what Cultural Revolution did in China, I mean, the effect only lasted for a generation. So you want to have a more lasting generation that build up a whole next generations that are more resilient towards, hey, I mean, whichever that the establishment is saying, we need to have like filter, we need to have bullshit detector. Coming up, yep. I mean, that takes a lot of education, because otherwise we can just easily be brainwashed by the educational system. And this is the sort of thing that we are wanting to advocate here, as in you develop your own sense of discernment over what is being said. Because at the end of the day, I mean, people get so triggered, even with Tucker Carlson interviewing President Putin.
Yep.
I mean, those sort of things, they'll be like, I mean, if you just read it as though it's a journalist interviewing another president, you don't really easily get triggered, and you'll
people
find
interview Saddam Hussein, Osama bin Laden,
or even Yasser our Arafat. Former prime minister.
Yeah, it's like what's the big deal, you know? But somehow this is again one of the projection by the Western media, and that is why people are continually saying that we cannot trust them, because they kind of brought it upon themselves, you know, by the extreme biases of the Russian-Ukraine war. And that is why when the Hamas-Israel thing happened, then you can see why the other side is coming out with this. They are not without validity, you know, in terms of the argument. But all we're saying is, regardless of which side you are from, you have to learn how to differentiate that. So I think one of the things we wanted to do originally in this episode is kind of talk about the actual news outlet, but I think let's save it for the next episode. And what I really want to do is, you know, look at some of the similar reporting, but by the different outlet, then you start to see the biases and things. I mean, bias is nothing to be feared of, because every media has bias. But the thing is, as a reader, you want to know the bias, and then you decide whether that bias you can agree or not.
Yep.
I think that's all you can ask for a person to learn to develop. It's not that difficult, right?
Yeah, I think one of the tests is also you are able to agree to disagree. Mm. But a lot of people will realize that if you're coming from an opposing view, if you get triggered when the other person is disagreeing with you and the other person is like calling a truce and say, let's just agree to disagree, and you can't settle with that, I think there's something wrong with you. So I think that sort of thing will be some sort of checklist that you could begin to examine.
Yeah, and agree to disagree is really, you know, it's very counterintuitive for the people who came from a very black and white, very Confucius kind of processing, because it's always like, it's this way or the other way. But that's one of the things that I think with the polarizing of nations, people need to be able to do that, because it's not so easy to become black and white anymore in this era. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we will do that. That's how we come in. Maybe hopefully we get some other guests to come in.
Yeah, maybe we'll do it.
No, yeah, but I'm always interested to see what people want to say. But I do feel that there might be an increase in the interest in this topic. So hopefully that will be true. So, okay, until next time, bye-bye now.
Right, bye-bye.